Hello and welcome to another episode of the Faultline podcast, the audio companion to the weekly trade publication analysing disruption in media and entertainment. My name's Tommy Flanagan, I'm the editor of Faultline and your podcast host. This week we have an extra special episode for a few reasons. Firstly, because I'm joined by my colleague Quentin Vidberg. Hello Quentin.
Hi everyone.
And secondly, because this episode isn't our usual guest interview format. So last week we were given a heads up that the Greening of Streaming, which is the non-profit members group advocating for energy efficiencies in video streaming, had released preliminary results from a couple of recent hackathons. We scanned through that document and wrote up a story summarizing some of the key results while scrutinizing some of the methodology and the findings, or rather lack of findings. But instead of putting our questions to Greening of Streaming at the time and having those answered in the story itself, where only Faultline subscribers could read them, we thought in the name of philanthropy, we'd save our line of questioning for a special podcast instead. So here to answer those questions, we have Dom Robinson, founder of Greening of Streaming. Hello, Dom.
Hey, how you doing, Tommy?
All good. And we also have Ben Schwartz, who is part of the Greening of Streaming Secretariat. Hello, Ben.
Hey, great to be here.
Thanks for joining us today, gentlemen. And the other strange thing is we're putting this out as a video as well as audio. So normally when we're animating on the podcast, you can't see that. So today, you will be able to. So first things first, we have very purposely attached in our write-up of the results a headline that tried to summarize the remote energy monitoring hackathon. So we went with Greening of Streaming previews SDR versus HDR energy results, EPG score poorly. And part of the reason we ran this headline is because the hackathon review itself is not totally conclusive and doesn't really have a headline takeaway. So we went ahead and picked one for ourselves. So the first question is whether you agree that this headline portrays what you wanted the review to portray, or does it, I mean, boiling it down to just a set of SDR versus HDR tests, does that kind of devalue or detract from the broader mission? What's your take on that?
Ben's got his finger up and he's burning to respond to that. So unmute, Ben.
Yep, and I'm muting. Sorry about that. No, it's correct what you said. There's nothing wrong in that. I don't really agree that it is the what we're really bringing to the market with that. That was a teeny little snippet of some early results to show that the system works. But what we're bringing to the market is that whole recording system. Basically, for the last year and a bit, my personal journey has been I've seen all these data floating around the industry, and some of the more reliable stuff comes from people like the French energy agency, ADEM, and they say like 80% of energy comes from the devices, 15% comes from data centers, 5% comes from networks. And I've been using it and working, and then Dom's been kind of shooting me down and saying, hey, Ben, how do you know that it's actually 80%? I say, oh, well, ADEM says so. And then we kind of scratch on the surface and we realize that the whole industry is working on a whole set of data that comes from some mathematical models. And when you talk to the academic experts of these models, they say, well, actually, we're not that sure of our stuff because, sorry about the police going by, we're not sure about our stuff because we're lacking real-world energy measurements. So we wanted to create an infrastructure, a measurement infrastructure that would work. I so happened to be responsible for the device part of Greening of Streaming, so we started there. But what we've put in place will work, and what we're really, and we know we're going to have it in 2024, and you'll be the first person we'll share it with. We will come with that 80-15-5 and say, well, actually, guys, it's pretty accurate, or actually, guys, no, it's like wrong by a factor 2. I don't think it'll be wrong by any of those numbers, but will be wrong by a factor 10, but they could be wrong by a factor 2. That and we've been trying to work on that for a year. And knocking at various doors, trying to find people. And everybody ends up saying the same story. Well, yeah, we have these really precise lab measurements. So this specific model of TV in this specific environment uses this much energy. Great. But there are millions of people with millions of different Wi-Fi routers. Some people use Ethernet. Some people use that. We don't know what people's standard. We know, for example, that the light in people's rooms has a huge effect on any modern TV. Any TV that's less than 3 years old will have a light sensor. And we have proven at IBC, I think you came and see the demo, it's a factor three. You know, the standard light uses 120 watts on a certain thing, and you can get it down to 60 watts by turning all the lights off, and you go up to 180 watts by turning all the lights on. And these kind of things. So we don't really know, does that kind of all balance itself out so that the ADEM figures are correct, or maybe it's not? So that is the exciting thing, is that we are in the next few weeks and months going to have some real data. And so what we did, the first thing, and what the hackathon report that you read, the real value is it shows a working system that is scalable to multiple thousands of measurement points, including in people's homes. That was an important part. It had to work in people's homes, because doing it in the lab is easy. So I think that was the core thing. But again, I'd like to say that you have a great talent for writing titles, and the title is correct. Everything you say in that title is not, I don't dispute it.
Good. That's a great start. Thank you, Ben. Dom, do you share those sentiments?
I knew Ben would effuse wildly about the project, and it does, you know, a lot of what's going on with this initial release is really speaking to this discussion, which has been, you know, something Ben and I have waxed lyrical over for a long time. There's this picture that we have, and we give out lots of statistics saying this much is used by this component in the workflow, this much is used by this component in the workflow, but even the measurements in those stages themselves are wildly complex. Let's call them wildly complex rather than necessarily inaccurate. I think they're wildly complex. They use a lot of extrapolation. And what we're attempting to do is get out there in the wild and really see if we can develop a measurement which actually correlates with those data sets. And if it doesn't correlate, we need to then start asking questions about why, and we'll have a better chance of engineering better if we get that real data in hand. So yeah, so I, you know, it does. One of the key details in the project is we're looking for these things we call signal markers, and you've picked out that SDR versus HDR is kind of a key indicator there. And your point about EPG scoring poorly, I think they certainly scored an interesting score. If there is a score, we've been careful to redact any fixed measurement because we don't want to go squirreling into, well, what devices did you try and why are you specifically looking at those devices? As sort of Ben outlined, we're looking at the big picture, not the individual device picture here. I would say that the EPGs were just the default starting point from where we started to look at what the effects of white SDI, white HDR, black SDR, black HDR were. And it was interesting for me particularly that the power goes down when you stream black video. That much is clear. And nearly all the systems actually used more energy doing not streaming video, just simply displaying the EPG. And I did find that fascinating. And maybe, as you raise in the article, maybe that's a great first sort of area for the industry to start thinking about its engineering in this space. But that's exactly what these experiments are designed to try to sort of explore and discover.
And if I may add one other thing, Tommy, as you did put in the title and in the content talk about SDR versus HDR, one thing we're really proud of, and this is something that Simon was able to acquire, and it's very rare to have this. We actually have, we tested output from a camera that came out as SDR and came out as HDR and was then properly processed as finished products. Because a lot of the testing I've seen done in the world is you take a piece of SDR content, you upscale it to HDR, and then you compare things. But you're kind of measuring the technology was used to do the conversion. And sometimes it's down conversion. In this case, it was pure HDR, pure SDR, but it must be exactly the same thing, filmed at exactly the same thing. So you have to get access to a camera with two outputs, an SDR output and an HDR. That is the only way. I've spent a lot of time talking to the deep experts, and I regret Simon's not here. He'd explain why. But it's quite hard to get hold of that kind of content, and that's the content we used. And I think you had a quick look at the content, and That's all. I just want to make sure that people are very careful about this, that SDR and HDR are different beasts, and you have to test the whole of the workflow, not just something that's been converted.
I'll be honest, there was part of me that was hoping that you were going to hate the headline and say that, no, this does a complete disservice, and this is not what you were trying to go for at all. But I guess we'll take it that we've kind of got part of it right. I just want to get a bit more granular on some of the results for our listeners. And one of the observations that we made from the test clip, you've already alluded to this, Dom, that the results showed that the black HDR consumed a mean wattage that was slightly lower than black SDR, and HDR energy consumption is across the other criteria is higher, like white SDR versus white HDR and SDR sports versus HDR sports, as kind of expected. But do you think this could be explained by the fact that the deeper blacks, you know, that the HDR camp wax lyrical about, are only perceived to be darker because the brighter parts of the picture have increased luminance in HDR? I mentioned this in the piece, not because the blacks themselves are actually any blacker, and therefore maybe you've accidentally debunked the myth of HDR's deeper blacks.
That's a great question. You know, I'm not a VQ guy. I'm a transmission guy. So I'm going to defer to Ben, because I think Ben's probably got a bit more to say on that. And I think, I think that's a great question, actually. I think it's probably a relative thing, but it's hard to say because we're looking at an energy level here, not necessarily looking at a VQ measurement. And this is one of the, you know, one of the most interesting things about data, especially data around sustainability, is we produce energy graphs, which we know correlate or increasingly correlating to behavior in media. And we immediately jump in our minds back to graphs which we're more familiar to, which are like video quality graphing or bitrate graphing and so on. And you start to make these assumptions that they behave in the same way. And it's not necessarily true that the screen is not as black because it's using less power or more power. You know, that there's all sorts of setup in the TV and so on, which might affect that. But Ben, you probably can talk more to that than I can.
Yeah. I think before going into the deeper blacks discussion, that listeners, readers must understand that there are fundamentally different screen technologies, which when you're doing the SDR versus HDR comparison, have completely different results. And so it makes it very hard to do statistical analysis. That's why we put this infrastructure up. So we're going to be able to measure thousands of devices in thousands of homes that will be representative of what happens in the market. Just a simple explanation point. Some of the devices that you saw in that data were OLED devices. So, you know, each pixel transmits its own light. That light goes through some filters, and then when it's off, it's just off, and there's no energy. A black screen, a black pixel is zero energy in that kind of technology. Then there's backlight technology, so all the LED ones. And the very early versions of LED ones were implemented in a very lazy fashion in terms of in terms of energy. What happens is the TV has its millions of pixels there. If it's doing SDR, each pixel uses whatever technology it does to for the light to come through. But then when it says, this is an HDR signal, whether it's black or white, it doesn't matter, HDR, so I'll turn my backlight on just in case, because HDR might require more light. And then all of a sudden, you see some of the TVs will double their energy consumption just because it's an HDR signal before they've even started displaying anything, because they've turned the backlight on and it's one big zone of backlight. Then you have other technologies, much more modern LED ones, the QLEDs, the microLEDs and things, which have you've heard this word dimming zones. So that's a great advantage of energy when you have lots of dimming zones. Rather than having the whole of the backlight turned on, it just turns on the required bits. So when you're doing a full black screen, it will depend on the maturity of that television. So even a television with a backlight, a relatively recent one that's been, you know, its third or fourth iteration, they've got the software right, they will realize it's a black screen and they won't turn the backlight on. But the early version, so somebody who has an HDR TV from 5 or 6 years ago that's based on LED, there's 9 chances out of 10 that it will use a lot of energy for black HDR because of that. It was one of those early, almost prototype versions. So I just wanted to put into the ring this idea that the technology used by the TV will drive these results very, very powerfully in one direction or in another.
I think just, can I just chip in something also? I think that that particular graph, the blue histogram that, that was in the review, just to talk a little bit more about the backstory of how that was created. Essentially, in our very first hackathon, the first part of our first hackathon, the graphing automation was still coming together. We kind of needed to do the first hackathon to start stimulating some data through the platform to then be able to create graphs, et cetera. So as we ran our first tests, what we were looking for was these big swings. We were looking for things that we knew from other groups like the UHD Forum and so on would create big swings in the energy signal. So if we play some white HDR, we knew that was going to use more energy than most other things. You know, it's kind of been strongly evidenced elsewhere. However, during that morning test, we didn't have any metering system. We only had like an app which could read the energy data off our local test points. So we took the results by hand. Hence, we represented them as a histogram, and they were all likely to be more wildly inaccurate than anything that was recorded through a proper metering system. So by the afternoon's part of that hackathon, we had the real data flowing. We'd had some in the morning to use as a test, and then for the afternoon sessions, we started to create data from which we could drive graphs. And actually the third hackathon, which we did a couple of weeks later, was the first time we really daisy chained everything together to run those tests to actually fully automate the data collection based on what we were testing. So that blue graph is itself interesting, and it shows that we were finding the right scope for looking for these signal markers, which we focused the test on. I think it's probably premature to read too much into the detail about the going back to the EPG relative to the others and the blacks and so on. I think it's too early. We need to be running that with thousands of test points for an extended period for this to then become really meaningful. But it's a good starting point that we've stimulated half an hour, 20 minutes discussion just off that one. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, there's so many nuances with the EPGs that we could go into, different functions, different styles, different colors. Yes, Ben? Yeah.
Just to point out, you rightfully said we weren't that clear on what we meant by EPG. Mm-hmm. And what we actually said is, what is the screen? It's just basically the screen that your TV fires up to when you turn it on. And so with some screens is a bit like an EPG, others a menu. It's basically the standard screen. Because EPGs are so different from one provider to another, things like that. So it was to give us a reference point.
Okay.
That's why we called it EPG/guide screen.
Mm-hmm. So the home launcher.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Okay. Let's take that down. Let's put home launcher. Yeah. I will.
Got it. Okay, glad we cleared that up, because, you know, thinking of a sort of traditional linear TV guide, which of course aren't very common these days among the younger generation. Glad we cleared that up. Just sticking with that graph you mentioned, Dom. I know you probably want to move on, but just an important point, because you mentioned already that the report has been redacted, and there's things in there we can't talk about, the manufacturer of the smart plugs, for example. But of course, the actual wattage from that graph has been redacted. But then in other graphs, like the Fraunhofer test graph, that was done in a lab test. Why is that redacted? Yeah. And the Fraunhofer not?
So the data in the later graphs is actually metered. It was taken from some digital system, so it truly represents what's on the left. I think on that blue graph in particular, it would have been really wrong, because we were all reading effectively from, it wasn't quite the same, but we were all kind of reading off meters like this by eye. And to start really putting a number that Faultline then go and report, black SDR uses 32 watts and white SDR uses 370,000 watts, you know, everyone's going to go, but mine doesn't. And that would have been wildly misleading. And we were only looking for trend. So this graph, perhaps in a redacted way, but it communicates this key difference between these peak and lows that we later then used in the hackathons as these key signal markers.
And I think also, if you read the whole of the report we wrote, the key word that Dom just said, trend, is what's important. You know, we're the greening of streaming, which is about the whole of the end-to-end streaming thing, and we're looking to find ways to affect trends. So whether at the end of the day, some particular usage of video in some context, we're talking 32 watts there and 6 watts in it. We're not really interested in that. We're interested if we change things, can we lower it by 5 or 10%? We'll use aggregated numbers. You know, we'll try and work out the terawatts used by TVs in a given country or something and say, well, if this was to happen, you know, these are the kind of percentage points. We thought that would be more effective than, you know, we had a strategic think about that and thought, well, actually the absolute values, you know, that there are other people out there, and particularly the manufacturers of TV sets for their sets and stuff. So we will obviously sometimes give absolute values, but that's not what we're about.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that, Ben, because that kind of opens up the question of, you know, the cynics who will say that you are getting too bogged down by hardware and CPE in these tests, when, as you said, you have to think about the bigger end-to-end picture. Of course, this is laying the groundwork. The report itself says it is too early to draw any conclusions on these samples. Very small sample size. So what would you say to those cynics?
Well, what you said, what we said, I just repeat what you said. too early. We're actually, and this is a call out to the industry, because I've spoken to quite a lot of mathematicians, statisticians. When will we have a sample that will be truly representative? If you think of the various polling, so I live in a country, I live in France, there's about 60 million people, and they've managed to do polling with 900 people. But they can find 900 people, and they ask them, you know, who are you going to vote for? And it's pretty accurate. And so if you kind of do the maths, what do we need? What is our sample size? Unfortunately, nobody's really, the experts of that haven't done the work, because if you think of just one second, the parameters, obviously there's the make of the TV, the screen size of the TV, the technology of the TV, but there's loads of other things. What kind of Wi-Fi do they use? Are they using Ethernet? Who is their internet provider? What else is on their local area network? That's just all the various parameters in the home. And then in the network, so in the States, there's a lot of this 5G broadband stuff. You know, what does that do to energy as opposed to fiber? So that's going into the access network. Then you get into the core network, and then we get more to Dom's area of expertise, the actual streaming and the origins and all those things. There's so many parameters that, to be brutally frank, we don't yet have a target. We don't yet know. An early statistician said you could probably do it with 300, but she was an expert. And this she said, I can't. I may be wrong. That's my gut feeling. So we've had gut feeling for people that we could do it with a few hundred. Other people have told us it's going to be a few thousand. We're working on that. But what we're really excited about is that we have the infrastructure to do whatever's needed now.
I kind of want to chip in with a bit of a call out, actually, to your listeners. I've been scouring LinkedIn and asking various people if we can get connected to Nielsen. When one looks up audience measurement, and in our sector, if you look up audience measurement on Wikipedia, it basically gives you a history of Nielsen audience measurement. And I feel that we might have an awful lot to learn from that community. And in fact, if we connect our data to some guidance from them on how we can better measure that, the most important thing we might end up with is an accord across the broadcast and digital media services industry that, okay, this audience is measured by this methodology. We kick the tires of that. This energy is measured by this methodology. That's reasonably transparent. We kick the tires of that. And hopefully that then means that the output data is more meaningful. So if any of your community could connect us with someone in Nielsen to have a sensible conversation, that would be cool.
Okay. I'm sure we could hook you up with some contacts, or any Nielsen people listening to this, joining Greening a Stream would be a great way to rectify your reputation of fudging data. So that's something to think about. Quentin, I'm going to hand over to you now. Have you got any questions?
Yes, absolutely. I felt like a little schoolboy again. I was raising my finger earlier when Ben was talking. I was like, oh, I feel like I was five in France again. So there's something I wanted to push back a bit on, or at least maybe get a bit more clarity from you guys on this idea of scalability. And from an outside perspective of someone who obviously didn't have to struggle to do, you know, to actually realize this, was it, first of all, first question actually, was this done at the DTG Zoo? I believe you mentioning that. Or
they were one of the test points, but it was essentially it's done in people's homes or in their home offices or in their places of work. So, yeah.
And it was done in the DTG zoo as well. So the answer is yes, but not only.
Okay. Yeah. And so when you were mentioning that, I remember really well ago, I was thinking, oh, it's this vast trove. There's so many TVs. Everyone was telling me this. Oh, it's so big. It's just all these. And so I was looking at the report, obviously very preliminary. You guys just wanted to prove, you know, it's possible. We have these markers. It works. But I was looking at it and there's like 10 TVs, six, not even all the streams that it didn't work for every single device. And I was like, whoa. Okay. So we've got, yeah. So just kind of wondering, like, obviously you're just testing this, but the scalability of it, how does that play in?
No, great question. So the key challenge for us has not been measuring stuff on a LAN. I think the data point that we included from Fraunhofer's testing, that was that's LAN-based measurements. And actually, a lot of the smart plugs are reasonably easy to work with on a LAN. The key challenge is getting that data into a workflow where you can read it centrally from homes, from many homes, from many locations. To that point, one TV or 10 TVs or 200 TVs in the DTG zoo or in Fraunhofer's test labs is kind of academic because we can actually sit in the LAN and do that anyway. What would have been interesting is 5-10 as it was in our hackathon locations, which are just anywhere. They're on the internet. And that means that we can now collect their data into a central location, go through a process by which they formally share that data to us, i.e. opt in, because we, you know, this is IoT devices. Everyone's a bit sensitive about privacy and so on. So it's nice to have that sharing function built into the workflow. They share into the system. Once they're shared into the system, they appear on the graph. And that's a centralized cloud. If I don't like to use the word cloud, but it's a centralized virtual service that is then by that architecture scalable. So if we now go back to the DTG with a small pallet load of little plastic devices, which is great for sustainability, and plug them into their 200 TVs, then yes, all of those could potentially come online into the testing. But equally, those 200 TVs could be anyone's home TVs or anywhere in the
okay.
world. Or for that matter, they don't have to be plugged into TVs. And part of the testing is we could ask the test locations to try plugging into other devices and explore those as well.
And that was part of my initial answer to Tommy was that what's exciting about this isn't the raw data that came out, is the fact that we have, and it's, I know it's only 10 TVs, but some of those TVs were in Germany, some of those TVs were in France, some of those TVs were in different parts of the UK. Did we have any other countries on that? We did have some in the US, but
we haven't got US online. That comes online next month. Yeah,
we're going to have the US, and that's the critical thing. That's the nut we cracked, and that actually really works. And that's what we're so excited about. Now we just got to the exciting data is going to be coming out over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, my point was kind of more on the fact that. From an outside view, it looked like, oh, you have a limited number of TVs, and even within that limited range, there's quite a few that haven't, for whatever reason, the feed. That was my point. I was like, oh, so is this a technical okay. issue? Like, what are you dealing with there?
So I can answer part of that. Again, we're kind of focusing this discussion on TV measurements because that's what we published about. But again, that is one small part of what we're going to do with all of this. But if you want to go into the issues of scalability, there are some. You obviously know where, that's why you're asking this question. And we struggled a lot with some of them. So, for example, a Roku-based TV, it's quite hard to get it to read a specific stream with a URL. You've got to do some tricks. And luckily we have people like Dom who have some of these tricks up his sleeve. And so, oh, it doesn't work. But blah, 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 he did some magic and he actually got the Roku TVs to go to our stream that was coming off an AWS server. And we had the same with when we did some USB stick based readings. One of the TVs just bricked and said, no, I don't want to read that USB stick. Although it was supposed to, we don't quite know why. So there will be issues. So when we have a group of multiple hundreds of people, we are aware that some of the measurements aren't going to work, which is why one of the things we've been thinking about all of this and the energy signature, which you kind of mentioned in the article, but I think is really, really critical for multiple reasons. One is when you're measuring, you're reading the results for multiple people watching the same thing. As you know, you've reported on the World Cup when people shout goal in one house and the house down the road is 20 seconds later, somebody's a minute later. Streaming, after a while, people get desynchronized. And so to measure what's going on, we need to resynchronize it. And we can't force everybody. There's nothing we can do about that. So the way we went around that is to create energy signatures in the data itself, in the video data. And so that is one way. So at the end of the day, we will be able to have literally hundreds, thousands of streams, all slightly desynchronized, but we'll have these marker signals in the video. And so we'll be able to tell exactly what to resynchronize them in the data the data analysis afterwards. Does that make sense?
I'll give you a TLDR version of that. I think, you know, once we could establish this big swing difference between SDR and HDR, we could inject what we were hoping would be an energy fluctuation in our readings. And because everyone gets that swing from black to white or whatever it is, we should see everyone's energy take some sort of response at that point. And essentially that's what we found through the paper, is that we could do that. We could actually correlate energy and video, how you set up the video stream. You could actually correlate that in real time to changes in energy demand in the system.
And the trick to do the non-TLDR version is to also make it work on devices I explained earlier, whether you're OLED, whether you've got backlight or not backlight, how many dimming zones you've got. So all these TVs behave differently. And what we were really excited about is they all showed a really clear, beautiful signature. It's literally like a watermark or a signature. You can see, oh, that's where that TV is in the stream. And that the signatures are sufficiently have enough amplitude that they work on all the technologies we've
Something
tested.
Worth making clear is when we come to doing tests in different parts of the streaming ecosystem. So, for example, at the packager or at the distribution edge cache and so on, we'll have to do the same sort of signal test marking. We'll have to take, for example, in a caching system, we'll have to take a low tide and a high tide, or a full and a running fully loaded and a running unloaded measurement, so that we know that we can correlate energy between those two extremes with what we expect. Now, if it turns out a loaded and unloaded edge cache just doesn't have an energy marker in that space, then we're looking in the wrong place to do the optimization. So the energy markers are sort of the best way to do some guesswork, a spike, if you like, and go, we all think it's around here, let's see what it is. Oh yes, that creates a correct correlation in the energy readings. Now we can start looking in those spaces for how we optimize.
Okay, so looking at the other working groups, you'll then be able to apply those same signal markers, for example, to measuring energy consumption for different codecs, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah? Okay.
Exactly that. With an overlay energy system, which in theory is sort of neutral enough that everyone goes, okay, that's cool, that's a good frame of reference, which is the hardest thing in the sustainability conversation at the moment, is getting everyone to talk about innovation in the same frame of reference, because competitive differences mean we all go, oh, no, I don't even talk about it in that way. And then actually we can't have a common conversation about aligning the strategies.
Yeah, sure. I'm conscious that we're over 30 minutes in and we haven't given credit to humans, not robots, yet. And I wondered if you wanted to give a quick shout and explain how they were involved in the project. I mean, yeah, as I said, there were a few things redacted from the report, but I think it's quite important that we give these guys some credit.
We're really proud to have them on board and part of the platform. When we started off with greening and streaming a few years ago, it was clear we were going to try to get measurement going, and that would end up needing some data aggregation. It was also clear that even getting into discussions about the structure of that data aggregation could take us down the path of trying to become a standards body and going into months, if not years, of discussion about metadata structures to do with energy recording and so on. And honestly, that would have been a distraction, because we would have had to complete that before we start doing anything. and that would have been the wrong thing to do. So instead, we adopted Humans Not Robots, who were coming at things as a sort of entrance into the industry to offer that type of data aggregation and analysis as a service. And it was like, well, we kind of need one of those. And they were starting up about the same time we were starting up. So we asked them to act as our default point of aggregation and start by doing something and then discuss if we're getting it wrong. And so in working group four, we established some models for capturing data out of CDNs and out of distribution architectures, which Humans Not Robots have aggregated. We don't really feel, I know we wanted to be sort of more public with some of that data, but we don't really feel like we've got enough sample data to really make comment about the industry behavior. And I think we would, if we started sharing the data we've got, it would too quickly get down to investigating a particular vendor's behavior. But they really helped us get that project moving, or that back end moving. And then as we brought together working group eight and started to look at having much bigger data sets, they just stepped forward and gone, cool, we'll sort the data aggregation hub out, we'll sort the process by which we grab the data from the from all the devices into that central location. And then some conversations that Chris and I have been having, and we're starting to have in our working group nine, are looking at how we actually make that most transparently and most easily available to the academic community and the industry community members. So not to forget, we want this energy data. We want a little bit more than we've got at the moment. We want to get the ability to select devices, and just run average of those selected devices. That will be all we really need in greening and streaming. But there's lots of other ways that the data we're gathering could be interpreted and used. If you could, for example, get some geolocation data about the test points and look at their energy mixes and those sort of things, you could start to go into a whole climate science with this data. That is beyond greening of streaming. That's not where our skills lie. We know the academic community wants those sort of data sets. So we are looking at giving the academic community a sort of a very clear point of interface with that data, where they can pretty much query it as they need to drive their own data sets, rather than presenting them just with graphs. And so having sort of rounded that off, Humans Not Interface kind of provides that data hub for us to be that interface between all this collected data, our own uses with our own graphs, and in due course, handing out some of that data to academia and wider industry analysts to get, hopefully from them, ourselves understand the climate impact of our industry better, rather than trying to make assumptions that honestly we can't ourselves.
Great. All right. I mean, kind of again, looking broadly, one suggestion made in the article, kind of the opening gambit, was that the honeymoon period is over for greening of streaming, and that, you know, patience is kind of wearing thin. You found it in 2021, and now it's kind of time to build on all these great ideas that you've had and start producing data that it can some way, you know, help to move the needle. That's kind of been the kind of overarching theme of this discussion. But do you agree with that statement?
Strongly at the moment. You know, Quentin's boss keeps asking these difficult questions, and I feel we have to be able to answer these questions honestly. And I think, you know, we were really lucky to be so well received by the industry last year and to make a lot of noise. But by the end of the year, I was really happy to see a lot of other groups and movements in the industry starting to focus on sustainability. And if we had some part in invigorating that conversation, that's great. But increasingly, there's a so what. There's actually a sense of, okay, we can all talk about chivvying each other up, but once we're all chivvied up, what are we going to do with that energy? What are we going to do with that momentum? And I think I felt very strongly, and I think everyone in greening and streaming felt very strongly, we needed to really sort of put our shoulder to the shovel or whatever it is, and actually start trying to make something happen that was really a clear platform for the industry to start having a sensible discussion rather than fighting over figures all the time, cohere around the same engineering objectives and collaborate on them. Because actually, I think, you know, these things are happening anyway, and in some ways maybe greening and streaming will infect everyone and itself no longer be needed, but that would at least have achieved its aims.
I actually joined greening and streaming a year ago, and that was my opening gambit, so to speak, to Dom. I said, come on, Dom, we've got the honeymoon's over. But I have a good, interesting closing topic, maybe a question for you guys at Faultline. Is my kind of gut feeling, I can't really explain it, is yes, we've kind of gone past the honeymoon. People are beginning to be a bit disenchanted. And the words that come to mind are those words of the hype cycle, typically. And I get the feeling that it's not just us at Greening at Streaming, that the whole topic of sustainability, and maybe not even in just our industry, I think generally in society, I'm getting this feeling that it was a growing topic, and it kind of peaked somewhere in 2022, 2023. And we are now going down the curve. People are feeling a bit disenchanted. They got all excited about this and the sort of scales we humans live in. We get excited about something and we want it then to happen in the next week or maybe the next month, but not the next bloody year. But unfortunately, we're working with technology that's deeply embedded in systems. And these things do take years. They don't take months or let alone weeks. And there is a kind of disenchantment. Yeah, so we're just... What we feel within the organization that is Greening of the Streaming is, I think, representative of something much deeper that's happening in society. So that's a question to you, Tommy.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I think that's one way to interpret it, that the hype bubble has deflated. But maybe the other way to interpret it is that sustainability has kind of been normalized. You know, I hear a lot of vendors talk about how kind of energy consumption is just in an RFP is just normal now. So it's kind of almost become table stakes, and you know, everything has the hype curve. But so yeah, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it is just becoming table stakes these days. And I think the other part is that Europe obviously is so much further ahead than North America in the sustainability conversation. I think it's only a matter of time before that translates over to the States, and you know, in NAB in a few years, it's going to be one of the big topics, hopefully. So that's my take. Quentin, anything to add there?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, to be honest. But also to Ben's point, I think you have this kind of hype of sustainability. I agree with you. You got this announcement, this legislation in Europe. There's the data center directive. You've got you guys announcing your plan. You've got Fraunhofer, that they've got their own Green Streams initiative. So you've got all this announcement, these initiatives. And I feel like, as Ben was saying, maybe we're in this kind of valley where there's no results. So we're just kind of waiting. And once data comes back, all of a sudden sustainability is back and everyone's going to be talking and have actual measurable information. So I feel like we're in this middle ground, to your point. And I kind of want to reflip it back on you guys as a kind of general question about Greening of Streaming. I'm aware we're kind of tight on time, but I just wanted to, there's something I noticed often whenever you, any report, any output you guys have, is that you're always looking for more industry actors. In the report, you mentioned that you need, you're looking for an established media player. And it always makes me think as well, something that you said to me in Madrid, you said you were kind of aiming to have, I don't know if the number is on the record, but you said you were giving me a number of members that you were hoping to have, to achieve. And in recent times, you have lost quite a few members Greening of Streaming. So I was kind of wondering, how do you equate that? And also, is my second thought is maybe you guys are just overextended. Like, you've got working groups, like the, I think the audio measurement group that's kind of on pause right now. Do you guys feel like maybe you tried to attack too much, or is that me just misreading things?
No, so great. I mean, it's a great question. It's the tough question. It's hard. It's hard at the moment. Last year, everywhere I went, everyone wanted to sign up and then signed up. And then by the autumn, everyone wanted to sign up and wanted to get more information to get through to a sponsor internally. And then by the turn of this year, the sponsors had all changed jobs and changed roles. And it was all kind of back into a whirling. Yeah, we're kind of interested, but we don't really know how to anchor it. As a broad comment to all of the people who I've been talking to, it's quite a lot. There's a lot of interest in sustainability, but to the point of an article Ben wrote a couple of weeks ago, it's very difficult to find out who's really empowered with it at the moment. There's quite often somebody who's got the role and they're assessing things and they're producing sort of internal analysis of what's going on to try to steer strategy. I'm yet to meet someone who has a role with strategy in their organization who can define the corporate strategy. Companies are not yet working around sustainability. Sustainability is on the table as a key part of the landscape, but I would sort of slightly, from my own opinion, venture that I think the actual ability for sustainability to steer sustainability officers to really say, look, this is going to cost us profit, but it's going to increase our sustainability measure, however that is measured. I think that's going to struggle to get traction in a corporate organization at the moment. It's about changing things without being seen to change things and without a budget, which is great. But as soon as you actually need to lose money or fundamentally change, it becomes a totally different wheelhouse for organizations, which is understandable. But it's just the practical reality. And I think that therein lies some of the honeymoon. People are facing up to the reality that it's not a walk in the park. That there are, in some cases, some quite significant engineering efforts that need to be done. My challenge to companies at the moment this year is to give $5,000 to the youngest member of the company and get them to go and come up with some practical things they can do towards ESG in their organization, because I'm pretty sure they've got the capacity, they've got the mindset, they just don't have a small budget to do anything at the moment. So that's my call out to the industry.
I don't know, that's a terrible idea. There was a time not so long ago where I was the youngest person at this company, and $5,000 would have been, not spent wisely. But I think that's a great time to segue to the question about NAB. Just a few weeks ago, you've already alluded to having some things in the pipeline for coming weeks. So what can we expect in Las Vegas? Any more data, any news on additional projects or new members?
Barbara from MGS is doing some great presentations there, and she's asked Ben and I to get involved with those a little bit, I think. And then separately, that's where we key Ben in, because Ben's got a platform, I think, for us. Ben.
Yeah, so this is difficult talking to a media organization about things that are where the ink isn't dry yet. So it's almost certain to happen that we will have a demo of the project that you wrote about will be live on the trade on the show floor at NAB for the first time. You can actually see the graphs, play with it. You can turn a TV off and see the graphs move and things. So, I mean, anybody's been able to do that for years in the lab, but the exciting thing is we go through the cloud for that. So we can put any of these measurement points anywhere on the globe. And we hope to be demonstrating that at NAB. We'll be doing that in partnership with the Ultra HD Forum.
Great, looking forward to it. We will see you guys in Las Vegas then. And so, yeah, we'll wrap up there. That's all we got time for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and thank you guys for joining. If you want to get involved in the Greening is Streaming project, then please head to the website. It's a unique cause, as we've discussed. It needs all the traction and collaboration it can get. And with that, hopefully, we're going to influence some of the major forces to move the needle and, you know, what's important for us is to help us more easily call out some of the greenwashing that's going on and stick it to some of the big boys. So cheers, Dom. Cheers, Ben. Cheers, Quentin. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.